Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 2, The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. We begin with text 5. Siddha Charna Gandharvar Vidyadara Mahoragai Kinarai Apa Sarobischa Kridabir Jushta Karakanduraha. Siddha, by the inhabitants of Siddhaloka. Charna, the inhabitants of Gandharva, Charna Loka. Gandharvai, the inhabitants of Gandharva Loka. Vidyadara, the inhabitants of Vidyadara Loka. Mahauragai, the inhabitants of the serpent Loka. Kanarai, the Kanaras. Apsarobi, the Apsaras. Cha, and Kridabi, who are engaged in sporting. Drushta, enjoyed. Kandara, the caves. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The inhabitants of the higher planets, the Siddhas, Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, serpents, Kanaras, Apsaras, go to that mountain to sport. Thus all the caves in the mountain are full of these denizens of the heavenly planets. Purport. As ordinary man may play in the salty ocean, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems go to the ocean of milk. They float in the ocean of milk and also enjoy various sports within the caves of Trikuta Mountain. I guess there are probably very few vegans in the heavenly planets. Text 6. Yatra Sangita Sanadar Nadad Guham Amarshaya Abhigarjanti Haraya Slagkina Parasankaya. Because of the resounding vibrations of the denizens of heaven singing in the caves, the lions there, being very proud of their strength, roar with unbearable envy, thinking that another lion is roaring that way. Purport. In the higher planetary systems, there are not only different types of human beings, but also animals like lions and elephants. There are trees and the land is made of emeralds. Such is the creation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura is sung in this regard. Keshava Tuya Jagata Vichitra. My Lord Keshava, your creation is colorful and full of varieties. Geologists, botanists, and other so-called scientists speculate about other planetary systems, but being unable to estimate the varieties on other planets, they falsely imagine that all planets are but this one are vacant, uninhabited, and full of dust. Although they cannot even estimate the varieties existing throughout the universe, they are very proud of their knowledge, and they are accepted as learned by persons of a similar caliber. As described in Srimad Bhagavatam, 2.3.19 Svavit Vrahostra Karar Samstuta Purusha Parshu. Materialistic leaders are praised by dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, and they themselves are also big animals. One should not be satisfied with the knowledge imparted by a big animal. Rather, one must take knowledge from a perfect person like Shukadeva Goswami. Mahajano Yena Kata Sapanta. Our duty is to follow the instructions of the Mahajans. There are 12 Mahajans, and Shukadeva Goswami is one of them. Swayambhur, Narada, Shambhu, Kumara, Kapilo, Manu, Prahlado, Janako, Bhishmo, Balair, Vyasakir, Vayam. Vyasakir, Shukadeva Goswami. Whatever he says we consider to be factual, that is perfect knowledge. Do we have a nectar of instruction somewhere? Is there a nectar of instruction in here? In the purport I mentioned Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, who is one of our pioneers of the Hare Krishna movement. He's most noted in our daily lives because most of the songs we sing all come from him. Just like when we sing Jai Radha Madhava, this is a song that poetry that he had created. And it was his desire that the Krishna consciousness movement be spread. After the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there are many different groups who came up, better known as the Sahajiyas, Owls, Bowls, Kartabakis, Gauranga Nagaris, Prakrita Sahajiyas, etc. And they all purported to be followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but all deviated one way or another from the philosophy and came up with many, many different speculations. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura is the one who reestablished the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu under the workings of Srila Rupa Goswami. And therefore, even though he was a magistrate, especially at Jagannath Puri, he's noted that he was more or less in charge of Jagannath Puri, the administration of the temple there, as a magistrate. Still, his life was so regulated that he was able to perform his duties as a magistrate in a half a day, and the rest of the day he'd write literature and poetry about Krishna consciousness. Although he had quite a large family, I believe he had 9 children, and most of them were 8 males and 1 lady. Amongst them, one of them was Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, who carried on our disciple succession. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura prayed for help for the mission, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent one of his personal associates, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada, to continue on with the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura had such followers as Srila Gaurakishore Das Prabhuji, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura himself was a follower of Jagannath Das Babaji. Although his initiating spiritual master is Vipi Bihari, still his actual inspiration and our disciple succession comes from Shiksha from Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, who is credited for reconfirming the discovery of the yoga pith. Bhaktivinoda Thakura was looking for the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya, and after examining many different places, he came to the conclusion that actually this place was where the Muslims had a little plot of land. There were many, many tulsi leaves growing there, tulsi plants. And this was confirmed as being the place of pilgrimage by Jagannath Das Babaji when he came to visit there. He was 120 years old at the time, and he was being carried in a basket by his servant on his head. The servant was carrying Jagannath Das Babaji on his head, in a basket, and when Jagannath Babaji arrived at the place, he jumped out of the basket into the air yelling, Gaur Nitai. So that was confirmation that a great Vaishnava like Jagannath Babaji was so ecstatic. Although, and this was what we, Bhaktivinoda Thakura, later on built a temple, which is still there, in commemoration of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu there. And there's one neem tree there, which is said to be the neem tree under which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born. And you can go there and take some dust from the neem tree. And this was known as the place of Janmasthan, and a little bit down the road, I think a couple of kilometers, is his place of activities. Srila Prabhupada said that, which is our Mayapur temple. And that way we can remember Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how diligently he spent his time, how expertly he spent his time in Krishna consciousness, maintaining a Vaishnava family, performing his service at the temple in Jagannath Puri, maintaining his position as a magistrate in Jagannath Puri and other places, at the same time writing voluminous literatures about Lord Krishna and his pastimes. So here in this verse, it mentions something. Oh, I guess we hit this probably. Oh, I would never guess it. Oh, that's pretty complicated. So this is from Nectar of Instruction. In regards to this verse we're reading today, and then I'll say a little bit about Gadadhar Pandit, which is Gadadhar Pandit in Chaitanya Charitamrita is not mentioned so much, except that he was a incarnation of Srimati Radharani, the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna, and he didn't have the Vama, the left-wing consciousness of being contrary to Lord Krishna. He was simply submissive to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was also a great worshiper of Toda Gopinath, whom it is said that he disappeared in. But when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leaving Jagannath Puri, Gadadhar Pandit insisted that he accompany Lord Chaitanya, although he had made a vow of Kshetra Sannyas, that he would stay in Jagannath Puri. Later, wait, let me finish that. Yeah, I'll give it to you. He'd stay in Jagannath Puri and worship Toda Gopinath, but he left there and accompanied Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him to go back and worship Toda Gopinath, which he did, and he fainted. Later on, he became the spiritual master of Vallabhabhat, who founded his own sampradaya, actually. Vallabhabhat was a great scholar, a devotee, but he was a little proud. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took away his pride in Jagannath Puri in different ways, and later on he took shelter of Gadadhar Pandit. So, in this regard, in this particular verse, since we don't really have that much time, and it takes a long time to get the password, don't try and steal her phone, it'll be useless. So in this regard, this is from Nectar of Instruction, text number 5. By rendering transcendental service to Krishna, one automatically performs all subsidiary activities. This confident, firm faith, favorable to the discharge of devotional service, is called Shraddha. Shraddha, faith in Krishna, is the beginning of Krishna consciousness. Faith means strong faith. The words of Bhagavad Gita are authoritative instructions for faithful men, and whatever Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is to be accepted as it is, without interpretation. This was the way Arjuna accepted Bhagavad Gita. After hearing Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna told Krishna, Sarvam etad ritamanye yanmam vedasi keshava. O Krishna, I totally accept as truth all you have told me. This is the correct way of understanding Bhagavad Gita, and this is called Shraddha. It is not that one accepts a portion of Bhagavad Gita according to his own whimsical interpretations and then rejects another portion. This is not Shraddha. Shraddha means accepting the instructions of Bhagavad Gita in their totality, especially the last instruction, Sarva Dharma Prachaja Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. When one becomes completely faithful in regard to this instruction, one's strong faith becomes a basis for advancing in spiritual life. Thank you. Seems quite easy. A little bit of faith, completely believing in Bhagavad Gita. For instance, Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, eighth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Sarabhutani kondiya, morti ek sambhavandiya, tasa brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradapita. Let's see. That's the wrong one. We can start with this one. Avyakta avyaktaya sarva pravanyohar agame ratri agame praliyante tatrava vyakta samkete. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state of, and thereafter, when the night falls, they emerge into the unmanifest again. Simple verse. But do we actually believe it? Everyone's worrying about the future. We know the future is we're going to leave our body. But we hope we'll wind up somewhere, maybe in the heavenly planets. But after some time, the whole world is annihilated. Do we actually believe that? And then we have to sleep for up to, actually, 311,040,000,000,000 years. Could you imagine? Good night. Wake up. Oh, can I just get another 1,000,000 years of sleep? It's been such a difficult creation. What to speak of? Parastasma tu vyakto yo vyaktam vyaktam sanatana yak sarveshu bhuteshu nasyatsu na vinashati. That there's another world which is not manifested, is called supreme and unmanifested. When one goes there, he never comes back to this material world. And that world, as Krishna says, is supreme, and it is my world. Avyakto shira itu tas tamahu param gitim yaprapyanam nivartante tadhama paramamama. That world is beyond the manifested, unmanifested, supreme, it is never annihilated. When one goes to that abode, he never returns here. So there are many things in Bhagavad Gita we struggle with, or we just ignore, because they're just beyond our experience. Since beyond our experience presently is even the full realization that we're not this body, what to speak of that there's a planet which is in the form of a lotus flower, which is bigger than everything. And here Prabhupada mentions in this purport that even the idea when we look up in the sky, we see the moon, that there are people on the moon. It runs contrary to our scientific, so-called science, modern science. Not only that, but practically everything that's going on in modern science runs contrary to our Vedic culture. They say they're advancing in science, but actually they're advancing technology, not actual science. Science begins with understanding science means something that's true in the past, present, and future. If it's not true in the past, present, and future, then it's not science. It's speculation. For instance, I think in 1905, someone got the Nobel Prize for proving that light was a wave. In 1926, he got the prize, someone got the Nobel Prize for proving that light was a particle. And then in 1950-something, someone got the Nobel Prize for proving that light was a wavicle. It wasn't a particle, it wasn't a wave, it was a wavicle. So, advancement means advancement in speculation. But actual science is in Bhagavad Gita, that we can perceive as science. That is, the body's changing, but we're not changing. That's science. In the past, present, future, that holds true. Now, whether there's a planet in the form of a lotus flower, which all the other planets can be contained in, all the universes, spiritual and material, that is beyond our perception. All we can do is try to understand what's in Bhagavad Gita to the best of our ability as a reality, not just as another idea that we read, oh yeah, sure, you know, avyakto shiri, no worse. And what to speak of other instructions in Bhagavad Gita. Ukramantas ditim papi bunjana vagunam dita vimudonana pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish, they cannot understand how the living entity quits his body or what kind of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature, but those whose eyes are trained with knowledge can see all this clearly. So Prabhupada had to preach on a very elementary level because most people in this world can't even conceive of the most fundamental principles of reality. I remember I was with Prabhupada a number of times when Prabhupada came to America and he was preaching about women's liberation. And that was a very hard conception for many, not as hard as now. It's gone way beyond that. But even at that time, it was a hard conception for people to understand. And so Prabhupada put it in the terms that men and women are not exactly the same externally. And he had to explain to the reporters that women give birth to children. And it took a long time for the reporters for that to sink in, the relevance of that, as if it had any relevance. And men can't give birth to women. So they're not exactly the same externally. That because women give birth to children, Prabhupada said, therefore, someone should take care of the child. It's not that they gave birth to the child and then, you know, sorry kid, grow up. No, someone has to take, there's even emotions that go on in relationship to children. In a normal society, people actually appreciate children. Even little baby cockroaches, if you ever saw a baby cockroach. Even they look cute. Their parents don't look so attractive. But baby cockroaches are quite cute. So in all the different species of life, the little children look quite cute. If you see a baby lion, little cub of a lion, it looks really cute. You'd want to play with it. But when they grow up, you probably wouldn't want to play with the lion. however tame it may be, probably let someone else play with it. So generally the idea is that there is a relationship, psychophysical relationship, between men and women that keep the universe going on and inspires them to take care of children. So these things are not bad. They're not something that you're supposed to overcome. If one tries to overcome them, one will simply get into psychological difficulty, trying to be something we're not. As a matter of fact, we all came to the material world to be something we're not, namely to become God. And we have that's our main psychological problem. As Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita, Ichadvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata Sarabhutani Samoham Sargayanti Parantapa. That all living entities are born into delusion, overcome by the desire and hate. And what is the fundamental desire? Is to become God, to become the Lord and the Enjoyer. And what is the fundamental hate? Is the fact that we can't do it. Modern society is especially cultivating this desire to become God through technology. And they're giving each other Nobel Prizes for a little advancement in so-called technology. A little faster machine, a more powerful weapon, whatever else. Ability to control others better, to know exactly what they're doing, etc. As if they're not under control. So this trying to advance to becoming God ultimately simply creates problems for everyone. Etam drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano na buddhya pravanya karmana shaye jagato hita. Following such conclusions, that is, that there is no God and that they can take his place, and lost to themselves, the demoniac create horrible, unbeneficial works meant to destroy the world. So we're so proud of our advancement in technology, which is actually making everything more complicated. Ultimately, the only thing we really need is good food and a little shelter, and then our economic problems are solved. But they've made it so complicated that you need a computer, you need a car, you need to be tracked, whatever else, in order to get food. Unless you have a car, unless you have your certificate for something nowadays, unless you have your license, unless you have your mobile phone, unless you have your internet connection, you can't get food. And they think they're advanced. Previously, people would go outside the house, throw a few seeds on the ground, take out a few weeds, and they get their food. But that's not possible anymore. And therefore, people are always in anxiety. What are they anxiety about? Am I going to get enough food for me and my family? And if I don't, will I die? And they don't know where they're going. They don't know after leaving this body what their destination is, nor do they even understand what kind of body they enjoy under the spell of the modes of material nature. Men are trying to become women, women are trying to become men, some of them are trying to become like animals, some of them are animals, as explained in this purport. So this is all because they're in ignorance. And their science of medicine, their science of astronomy, their science of geology, it's all in ignorance. They've been searching for hundred years trying to find the missing link, trying to prove that Darwinian evolution is actually a science. And whatever they find, which runs contrary to what they believe to begin with, they just throw out. And they call that science. I remember when I was studying anthropology in school. They wanted to prove that evolution. So they took a horse. They showed a picture of a horse, a little tiny horse, and then they showed a bigger horse, and a bigger horse, and a bigger horse. Maybe you've seen that in some kind of textbook. And they said this proves that the horses are getting bigger as they evolve. What they didn't say in the textbook was actually the little horse was actually found in strata higher than the big horse. And some of the intermediate horses were all found in different strata. So completely disproving their theory. But honesty is not one of the big elements of modern education. In other words, the actual finding of skeletons in the strata, which the geologists look for, actually disproves their theory of evolution. And since there have no missing links, except Prabhupada said the missing link is between my foot and their head. That's the missing link. But people accept it because they're blind. And what is the connection? The big animals who are engaged in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending better than they are, supposedly, that they become the leaders. So they can advance in eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But their actual knowledge is being robbed by that. And therefore, even though things are obvious that were fact that the soul is not produced from matter, just so no future, however pleasant, idle talks regarding the future development of living entities from matter is just so much idle speculation. Even though that's true, and with a tiny bit of intelligence, one can understand that the whole basis of modern society is just false. That the soul is eternal. This idea that, no, someone's about to die. One devotee, I remember, I was in Soho Street one day, and he said he just came back, he was on a japa walk. He was thinking of leaving the movement. But he was on the japa walk just around the corner from the Soho Street Temple, if you know Soho Square. And there was two homeless people there were having a fight, a disagreement. And one of them, from his boot, he took out a knife, which was like a sword, and he started to stab the person he was having a disagreement with. And this man was bleeding all over, and the guy with the sword put the sword back in his boot and walked away. And then they called a helicopter. I mean, it cost thousands of pounds, a helicopter, and came there trying to save him. Because they couldn't save him. But at the expense of thousands of pounds. Homeless person, probably hadn't seen 1,000 pounds in his last 20 years of living in a homeless life. But this idea that this person about to die, the worst thing possible, try to save him, which is all right. We can appreciate the idea that they're so-called compassionate. But they never try to save him when he's homeless. That they couldn't care less about. Because they have no idea about the soul. That actually the soul doesn't die. But the whole idea is that you're about to die, now you have to sign a contract. So at the time of death, they don't put you on a life support for 20 years. Your brain's dead. Everything, nothing works, but they keep on pumping you. Because they're afraid you might leave your body. And no one knows where you're going. So out of fear, they keep on pumping you for 20 years. So you have to sign something before you die, not afterwards. Oh my God, this is 20 years. Can I sign something? Just get me off this life support. Because there's ignorance. Out of ignorance, they want to kill each other quicker. out of ignorance, they're trying to get amass fortunes so that they feel protected. Simply out of ignorance. Geology, their science of medicine is simply ignorance. Instead of actually trying to build up the body, they have this idea that the whole world is trying to kill you, and therefore you have to, out of defense, you have to kill the whole world. That you can go on doing whatever you want in terms of sense gratification, it's all right, and when some vicious germ comes and attacks you, just try to kill it. And even if you get killed in the meantime, but still, science worked. You killed the vicious germs. Although you died also. But you died scientifically. I remember my aunt, she had a problem with her bladder, so she went to the doctor, and the doctor gave her some medicine. And the medicine had contraindications. She got some side effects from it. So he gave her some more medicine. And then she got side effects from that medicine. Finally, at the end, she was in the hospital, in the emergency ward. She actually was seeing 5 doctors a day prescribing different medicines to counteract the other medicines that the other doctors were given. And she died in the emergency ward from a bladder infection. Not from the bladder infection, from the side effects of the medicines that they were giving her. And my uncle got the bill, and the bill was for $1,200,000 for a bladder infection. And he was happy. He said, my mother was quite disturbed about the whole thing. He said, at least she died scientifically. So they're so fooled. They don't know what science of medicine, they don't know what the science of geology, they don't know the science of astronomy. They're simply speculating, and foolish people are accepting their speculations because they haven't heard Bhagavad Gita. And even those who hear Bhagavad Gita, the fact that we're not this body, the fact that there's a control in the universe, still they have a hard time accepting that actually Krishna, in the form of Dhanvantari, can give us science and medicine, or in the form of Shukadeva Goswami in the 5th canto, can give a factual description of the universe. Still, even the devotees are doubtful. I remember one of the first devotees I knew in the movement, his name was Purushottam. He was Prabhupada's servant. And in 1969, I believe, they supposedly went to the moon. I was a devotee at that time. I didn't know what was going on in the material world. At that time, we were much stricter than we are now. And there was no internet. The only way you got news is either the radio or the television or the newspaper. But the devotees didn't read newspapers back then because you had to go out and buy one. We had no money. So, no question, even if we wanted to read a newspaper, we couldn't. And certainly we had no radios or televisions. We didn't even have a tape recorder. So, but Prabhupada was, we heard they were going to the moon, he called someone to bring a television. And they're all watching the moon landing. There was, I think, I forget who besides Purushottam, maybe it was Govinda Dasi or someone else. They were watching the moon landing. And if anyone, I never saw the moon landing, by the way. I didn't even know they went to the moon until like 5 years later. Supposedly went to the moon. But they were watching it. When I saw it, whatever I saw, it was like, you'd have to be completely an idiot to think that actually went, you know, that was actually moon landing. You couldn't see anything. It was like ghosts on a screen or something. It was so unclear. In any case, Prabhupada was saying, because Prabhupada didn't believe that they were landing on the moon. But Purushottam, he actually had firm faith in the scientists. So he could not accept the idea that they didn't go to the moon, that that wasn't the moon landing they were watching on television. Whatever, how blurry the whole thing was at that time. In any case, Prabhupada made the remark, I think, I forgot what happened, but he said, oh, Purushottam, he went to the moon. Anyhow, Purushottam was so disturbed that Prabhupada had no faith in the moon landing that shortly after that he left. Which is like, what? Because Prabhupada, he wasn't exactly 100% interested in trying to contradict the fact that they went to the moon. He could, you know, in other places he said, well, maybe they went to Rahu, or they, maybe they landed on the moon somewhere, but they didn't find the right place, or whatever. That wasn't the main point of Prabhupada's preaching, the fact that to deny that they went to the moon. His main point was, if they were correct, that they actually landed on the moon, they didn't find anyone there except for dust, then that would be, they're disproving the Vedic literature. Disproving Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is Sarvagata, that the living entities are everywhere. And on that basis, Prabhupada would point out that they have imperfect senses, so that even if they went to the moon, they wouldn't see the inhabitants there. Nor would they be allowed to go there. So many different ways Prabhupada tried to contradict this idea that they went to the moon, and that the thousands and thousands of photos that they took were actually real. As I mentioned the other day, as a matter of fact, all those thousands and thousands of photos, they've disappeared. They can't remember where they left them. Such is Kali Yuga. Now, anyone who believes such a crazy idea that after spending billions of dollars to go to the moon, they had these photos, and suddenly they all the original ones all disappear, would have to have a real lot of strong faith in all the different contradictions that arise from their so-called moon landing. And that's only one little point. If we examine modern philosophy, modern entertainment, modern anything, it's just full of contradictions, which we can spend a whole lecture just on. But we're not going to do that because we're out of time. So thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes.
There are 12 Mahajanas. It's a classic list of the Mahajans. And it seems we have a lot of from the purport.
Yeah.
That it seems that we have a lot of instructions from some of them, but Janaka, at least in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I can't remember any place where...
He's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita, though.
He's mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita.
Even kings like Janaka and others, they perform their prescribed duty, just to set the example of others.
So, does it refer to some of his instructions in the Mahabharata that are there, or just his example, or some other instructions that may be found somewhere else?
I guess so, because, or his example, somewhere or another, is Mahajan's examples to follow also, not only his instructions, but also example. After all, Srimad Bhagavatam, the literature that we have is not the only literature, so... And the naming of the Mahajans, that's in the Mahabharata, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
The names?
No, I mean the Mahajana Yenikata Sabhanda.
Yes, Mahajana.
Is Mahabharata, so. Swayambhur, Narada, Shambhu. So it's in the idea of Mahajans. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is the story of the Mahajans also. They're explained in detail, except for Janaka. He just mentioned it in the, I believe, in the ninth canto, the story of Lord Ramachandra. So anyhow, I don't know.
And I was also asked about this number of 12 Mahajanas. Why not more? Aren't there some other Mahajanas?
Yeah, anyone who... There's so many Mahajans. Everyone has their Mahajan. Prabhupada explained Mahajano Yenikatasapanta. Everyone, whoever you accept as your leader and you follow them becomes your Mahajan. So Prabhupada writes in the purport for the demons, those in the mode of ignorance, the Ravana Harini Kashipu are Mahajans, Kangsa. For those in the mode of passion, Bill Gates and others are Mahajans. For those modes of goodness, then the conservationists or the Greenpeace or whatever else, they're Mahajans. So everyone has a Mahajan.
But also for us, like for example, Arjuna or...
Whatever. They can be also Mahajans.
Yes.
Because we follow, those who gave instructions or examples we follow, they become our Mahajan, Mahajana, great person that we follow.
Okay.
But, you know, if the Bhagavatam listed all the Mahajans, it wouldn't be room for anything else. And even today we have Mahajans that we follow. Anything else? Abhidhuta Roy? No, another.
Thank you for an inspiring lecture. What is the difference between blind and firm faith? How to avoid the danger of blind faith?
Well, there's two different questions there. One of them is, firm faith is based on realization. We realize that as much as we realize something, which means in the mode of goodness, real faith, Prabhupada writes, is in the mode of goodness. When we see everything as it is, becomes self-evident. Like the fact that the body's changing, but we're not changing. So when we realize our eternality, realize it without any doubt, that's called firm faith. Faith is not faith in some speculative knowledge. Faith is faith in reality, that the body's changing, but the soul isn't. That the planets are moving their orbits because of a superior intelligence, supreme intelligence. That's firm faith. Faith in something else is called faith in the mode of modes of nature. Krishna says in the 17th chapter, Arjuna asks him that question, what about people who have firm faith or faith in other things? Are they in goodness, passion, or ignorance? And then Krishna says if they have faith in the demigods, their faith is in the mode of goodness. They have faith in the Rakshasas or the Asuras. Their faith is in the mode of passion. If they have faith in the Rakshashas and the demon and the other lower living entities, their faith is in the mode of ignorance. So, according to the modes of nature, sattva nirupa sarvasha, shara bhavati bharata, shara ma yo yo puru sho yo yo strata seva saha. According to one's situation in the modes of material nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. And according to one's faith in the modes of nature, one will act, and according to those activities, one will evolve another kind of faith. So we have faith according to our conditioning in the modes of nature, but when we become unconditioned, when we become purified, then that faith is real faith because it's based upon reality. Anything else? Yes.
I wanted to ask about Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Many times different things are said, that they are friends, that one is follower of other, and it's not clear who is follower of who. And if you can say something
more. Well, I'm sure they were servants of each other. When you become self-realized, you realize you're a servant of the other devotees. But in any case, Gaur Kishore Das Babaji used to attend the lectures of Bhaktivinoda Thakura. For that reason, he's put in our disciple succession as a disciple devotee from Bhaktivinoda Thakura. But I'm sure they were great friends. It's not one contradicts the other. Anything else? Have a do to Roy.
Hare Krishna. In purport of Vishwanath to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.7.17, if you have faith in my words, then may you have intelligence fixed in the Lord, Vaisharadi. Prema arising from bhakti, Shraddhata, which arises from mercy of the great devotee. This will be understood in later in the text. Question: if you believe, if you have faith, can one choose that?
Oh, I have no idea what you're. What's been, does anyone know what he's referring to? Believe what?
I don't know. Maybe here's further down. Few weeks ago, there was a solar eclipse. I have some doubt it could have been caused by Rahu, because Rahu is an invisible planet and people could see some planet before the sun. What do you think?
I think that Rahu causes the eclipse, and you only see Rahu when he's causing the eclipse. Whoever said Rahu is he may be invisible to you. That doesn't mean he's invisible. Rahu, he knows. When Rahu looks in the mirror, he can see himself. So he's not invisible. Rahu is an actual demigod, asura, who got his head chopped off by Vishnu. And therefore he has two sides. Rahu is the head, and Ketu is the body. So those who have eyes, they can see. And those who can't, they can't see him. Certainly the sun sees him and the moon sees him. Anyhow, these are things that we can't see a lot of things, including ourselves. We can't even see the tip of our nose most of the time. So what to speak of Rahu and Ketu. But we see their effects. Otherwise, the science have their idea of what causes an eclipse. And the Vedic literature has another idea. So the question is who you want to accept. According to the scientists, Rahu and Ketu are just points, so-called scientists. But according to the Vedic astronomies, they're actual entities which actually have effects, which are predictable. And therefore, when there's eclipse going on, according to those who are followers of the scientists, they don't take it as anything special. They just think it's some kind of experience. And those who are followers of the Vedic culture, they perform, like when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was born and there was a solar eclipse, they bathe in the Ganges, chant Hare Krishna. Because they understand it has its psychological and physical effects. It's not non-existent or invisible. Anyhow, we try to be followers of the Veda culture as much as possible. And if we could, we'd bathe in the Ganges. Or at least think of the Ganges. All right. Thank you very much. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.